The Christina Borgeson Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I wanted to start today's show with something kind of amazing and hopeful. And my guest today is, I think, just the ticket. You remember that weird photo of Michael Jackson laying down in what looked like a glass coffin? That was actually a hyperbaric chamber, and he bought one for his home in 1994, and people around the world made fun of him for using it. Turns out Jackson was way ahead of his time. Hyperbaric oxygen therapy is finally starting to get recognition as a tool that could revolutionize medicine in many ways. My guest today, Dr. Jason Saunders, is the clinical director of New Jersey Hyperbaric Oxygen Treatment, or NJHBOT, and HBOT USA. He's a certified hyperbaric practitioner. He is also a chiropractor with a postgraduate degree in kinesiology, which is the scientific study of human body movement. Now, he supports patients with a variety of autoimmune and neurological conditions, allergies, autism, cancer, and many other ailments. He combines hyperbaric oxygen therapy, nutrition, exercise, detoxification programs, and much more to help naturally support patients and guide them through their health challenges. He's here to talk about his book, Oxygen Under Pressure, an astonishing account of what hyperbaric oxygen treatment is, how it works, and how it's used to treat this myriad of serious illnesses. Welcome, Dr. Saunders.
Thanks for having me on, Christina. It's great to be here.
So now you fell into this quite serendipitously. You want to tell that story?
Sure. So exactly right. I mean, about 15 years ago, I herniated a disc in my back. And along with the back pain, I was also left with a drop foot on my right leg, where I literally wasn't able to use my right leg and my right foot properly. And my wife's also a chiropractor, so she was treating me. You know, my background, like you said, was, you know, exercise physiology. I have a lot of background in, you know, kinesiology and nutrition. So we were doing, as far as I could tell, all the right things from a natural anti-inflammatory standpoint, from a rebuilding, you know, the musculature and my movement patterns. And my back got better relatively quickly, a couple of weeks, but I was still left with that neuropathy. And about a year and a half later, just happened to be at a conference where there was a large vendor hall and lots of different equipment. And they had these hyperbaric chambers. I had no idea what it was. I didn't know what to expect. I actually had no expectation at all. It looked interesting to me, so I wanted to try it. And so at the show, they put me in for about 30 minutes. And I climbed out, didn't think anything of it. I started walking around this vendor hall. And in about 15 minutes later, I started getting pins and needles in my foot, which was literally the first time I had felt my foot in about a year and a half. And so right away I said, you know, gosh, am I feeling my foot because of that thing I was just in? You know, what was that? And so I went back and I spoke to them for a little while. And, you know, of course he said, yes, I think that would be from this. And so they agreed to treat me. I did about 8 hours worth of care over the next 4 days. And I had left that weekend with about 20% recovery in my foot. And so, you know, I actually bought a hyperbaric chamber. I brought it home. I treated myself for a few more weeks and I had full recovery of my foot. And at that point I thought, you know, gosh, I've been in practice. I've been treating people with disc herniations and neuropathy. You know, at no point in my career had anyone ever mentioned hyperbaric oxygen. I didn't even know what it was. And yet this was the only thing after all that time that finally gave me my, you know, the function back in my leg. And so at that moment, I really decided that, you know, it was time to kind of dig into the research and the, you know, the practice of hyperbaric medicine and start implementing it, you know, in our clinic, at least at that time.
Okay. So before we get into the particulars of how this works and what it does and so on, I want you to talk about your the medical philosophy, which is a functional medicine philosophy that you practice, that makes hyperbaric oxygen therapy so perfect for all your patients. And it's very different from the allopathic perspective. I think it's important to set up why you do what you do with hyperbaric nutrition, et cetera, compared to how allopathic physicians will look at the same illness that your patients come to you for treatment.
Yeah, that's actually a great point. So, you know, and this is just, I guess, healthcare philosophy, and not that one is necessarily right or wrong. It's just what we learn and how we apply the techniques and things that we learn. So, you know, my understanding of health and human physiology is that we're designed to be healthy. We're designed to express, you know, full potential in our health, pain-free, full range of motion. You know, and any time we're expressing anything less than whatever the optimal health for us should be, we would tend to look at that and say, well, either I may have something, too much of something that my body's having trouble getting rid of, toxicity of some kind, or potentially I'm not getting enough of something my body needs in order to function properly, a deficiency of some kind. And those toxicities and deficiencies could be chemical, like vitamins and minerals and those kinds of things, but they could also be physical. In other words, you know, too much exercise or not enough exercise or poor posture or poor movement patterns, right? Those are different ways that toxicity and deficiency can show up physically. And then, of course, there's emotional toxicity and emotional deficiency, where, you know, toxicity would be things like maybe emotionally, like jealousy and anger, stress, right? Emotional stress. Whereas, you know, joy and love and satisfaction in our life, that would be more emotional sufficiency. So, you know, we're just, in the way I look at health is that stress is the cause of all the things that go wrong, but also the way to help our bodies heal. And it's a very delicate balance of making sure that those stressors are generally positive, that are helping us heal, helping us recover, and helping us repair our bodies and our tissues. And when we're evaluating patients, we're always looking for, you know, where are those toxicities and how can we help somebody remove them? And where are those deficiencies and how can we help somebody, you know, replenish them?
Well, I was actually talking about something more fundamental than that, because there are several things that I found interesting in your book that differ from the allopathic model. One is that the allopaths, they look at the disease and they treat the symptoms of the disease as opposed to the root problem that creates the symptoms. So basically, they're not looking beyond the symptoms. They're just treating the symptoms. And whereas in functional medicine, you guys, you want to know what the root problem is. What is it that is, you know, causing these symptoms, not just deal with the symptoms. And the other thing that you mentioned in your book that I thought, I was like, oh my God, I never thought of that. Because, you know, I've had kidney cancer, and I no longer do. But, I was told to have gene testing because, you know, it's in your genes. And right. In your book, you talk about how the genes are not the cause of cancer. Because the genes don't act on your body. They're reactors. They're not actors. Did I read that correctly? In other words, you come in with a genetic makeup that is also baked into that genetic makeup are all the crappy things too much drinking or whatever that your ancestors did. That's all baked into your genetic makeup, but your genetic makeup is not the thing that causes your cancer. It's whatever environmental or other thing that acts upon your genes, you know, and how Absolutely. Your genes respond to that. Is that correct?
Yeah. So, I mean, the comparison I would give would be something like, your genes are the instructions So when your body is exposed to this environment or this environment, whatever the environment is, your genes have already described how the body should express itself in that environment. But it's still the environment that ultimately dictates the expression. In other words, I use this example a lot. If two people, you know, let's say you and I, let's say I had a gene that predisposed me to diabetes and you didn't, but we both ate, you know, high amounts of sugar for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, the likelihood is that we'll both get diabetes. I'll just get it sooner than you because I have a a genetic predisposition for that, whereas you may not. At the same time, even if I had that gene and you didn't, but both of us, you know, led a very low sugar lifestyle, even though I had the gene, it doesn't mean it's ever going to express itself if I don't, you know, expose myself to that environment. Gene shouldn't.
Right. So really it's the environment that acts on the gene. The gene has its weaknesses and its strengths, but those aren't activated or affected unless they're activated and affected. I think is so important to say right up front too, which is a philosophy that you don't get much in the allopathic world is,
you know, you at this boost point,
the body is, yeah, go ahead.
At this point,
I was going to say that the basic premise,
right?
What, that the body heals itself?
Well, just the lifestyle triggers are what's called epigenetics. Epigenetics are literally around or above your genes, and lifestyle dictates a majority of those epigenetics. And so, the epigenetic expression, you know, that's very well. You know, I'm in the middle of a PhD right now in molecular biology at the University of Miami. It's, you know, it's a very traditional molecular biology course. And, you know, we're covering epigenetics in good detail. Like, this is very standard of care, what we're describing. It's just, it hasn't been applied clinically yet as much in allopathic medicine as it has, let's say, in functional medicine.
Well, we're all waiting, trust me. Because also, what I like about your attitude, your medical approach, is that the body is its own best healer, and your job is to find out what is the root problem in the body, and to support it in non-toxic ways to allow it to regenerate itself. Is that correct?
Yeah, 100%. And what you were talking about earlier and the answer I was giving at first when you had asked that question, if you understood that the body was just designed to basically genetically break down over its lifespan, and you should expect things to stop working properly, and you should expect to have loss of mobility, increase in pain, and less quality of life as you age, it would make perfect sense that we would try to put band-aids on all of those symptoms to try to make people as comfortable as they can be throughout their decline in their life. The opposite is the way we look at it, which is if you're seeing those things, we're not designed to break down over time in that way. We're actually designed to have a very long health span. And it's only in the last few years of our life that we should see a decline, not for 20 or 30 years like we are seeing right now with all the chronic illness. And so when your understanding is that the human body was designed to be healthy and you start to see things stray from that, that's when you step in right away and you're like, why is this happening? This isn't part of the original design. We need to step in and take action. And that's kind of what I was trying to describe initially and what you were talking about in terms of the philosophy.
Okay, so let's get to hyperbaric oxygen therapy. What is it? What is it? What does it do? How does it work?
So I think the simplest example would be that, you know, hyperbaric oxygen is increasing the pressure of the air or the pressure of the oxygen that you're breathing while you're getting treated. And if I took a step back from that, I would say this. I live at sea level and we have an atmosphere on planet Earth, and the atmosphere creates a pressure. And that pressure is why you and I are absorbing oxygen even right now as we're having this conversation. We all know that if you go to elevation, let's say I was in, you know, I'm on the East Coast. Let's say I went to Colorado and I'm at 5,000, 6,000 feet of elevation. we all know that it's harder to breathe at elevation.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason for that is not because there's less oxygen percentage. Air is 21% oxygen no matter where on planet Earth you are. The reason for that is because there's a loss of pressure. So as you get further and further away from the Earth's surface, you lose pressure, which means you lose the driving force that pushes oxygen into your body when you breathe. When you go below sea level, the opposite is true. When you go below sea level, you can create increased pressure gradients, which means as you descend below sea level, you can start driving more and more oxygen into the body. And hyperbaric is really just a way to artificially create an increased pressure environment that allows that oxygen to get driven into your cells.
Okay, we're gonna take a break right here because we're gonna talk about what that does to your body. We'll be back after these messages.
Free speech is in our DNA.
Experimental vaccines will never change that.
Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Yeah, even there. Never miss out on the news and views of the big issues of the day. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio.
Or download the TNT Radio app for free.
From the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Revealing Ukraine.
Good morning, Mr. Medvedchuk. I'm Oliver Stone.
It started as a peaceful protest in one of Europe's busiest capitals.
Big politics. And suddenly Ukraine?
Because I care about war and peace, and I'm a citizen of the world. I was in Vietnam War.
Borders of Europe cannot be redrawn with force.
As a citizen of Ukraine, I am a supporter of territorial integrity.
And I learned a lot about Ukraine, and I worked on Ukraine on Fire. Interviewed Mr. Putin.
Yes, Ukraine решила.
I feel sorry for Ukraine because
gunmen took control of another government facility.
Fighting with Moscow-backed rebel groups is ferocious.
This is an act of aggression by Russia.
Russian election interference.
Keep pressing. It's very easy.
Revealing Ukraine continues investigations on the ongoing Ukrainian crisis.
Introduce yourself to people who don't know anything about you.
Paul Manafort consulted for Viktor Yanukovych.
That Manafort was in the pay of who? Where does George Soros figure in all this?
It's the birth of a nation.
Fascisti!
Ukraine remains on a hair trigger.
The way towards change goes through peaceful protests.
Wall Street people make money on this.
I can say that we, unfortunately, were right.
Russian forces fire upon three naval vessels.
I was not in favor, and still am not in favor, of Ukraine joining NATO.
Russia did not help me.
Take me through the events, through Maidan and up to the present. Why do so many Ukrainians hate Russia so much? Who controls the media? Who shot the protesters? Do you have an idea?
Revealing Ukraine at salemnow.com.
Through the training.
Through the drills.
Through the driving rain.
Through borders. Through bushes.
Through barbed wire.
Through doors. Through windows. Through walls.
Through water.
Through mud.
Through dirt.
Through pubs.
Through clubs.
Through thick and thin. Through the noise.
Through the shouting.
Through the silence.
Through it as a unit.
Through it as a team.
Through it all together.
Your local infantry regiment is recruiting. To find out more, visit your local Army careers office or go to armyjobs.mod.uk. One Army, regular and territorial.
Telling the truth is the only mandate we believe in. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We're back with Dr. Jason Saunders, who treats his patients with hyperbaric oxygen treatment. And he was just getting into describing how it all works. You were saying how it was just like being at below sea level, and it infuses, and the pressure brings in a lot of oxygen, not just into your lungs, right? It brings it into all your organs too, right? Yeah, go ahead and talk about that. How it works.
So normally, you know, most people, when you go to your doctor, they put that thing on your finger, a pulse oximeter. And it tells you how saturated your red blood cells are with oxygen, meaning when you breathe oxygen in and you have to bring it into your body in order to deliver it to your cells, we have transporters of oxygen. They're called red blood cells. And red blood cells are basically smaller cells that absorb oxygen at your lungs, bring them to your cells and release the oxygen, go back to your lungs, collect more, go back to your cells to release it. And it just goes in that cycle. But we are limited to how much oxygen we can absorb based on how quickly or however many red blood cells we have. And so if you're healthy without, or at least if you don't have any lung or heart issues, most of us would be about 98, 99% saturated already, meaning there's really not a whole lot more oxygen our bodies are capable of holding on to under normal circumstances. And so you could be close to 100% saturated, but have an injury or a chronic illness or an inflammatory issue or toxicity of some kind, where even though you're 100% saturated, if you were able to tap into some extra supply of oxygen, your body would be able to utilize that oxygen for improved healing and recovery. But again, under normal circumstances, we really don't have any ability to create that reservoir. Ultimately, that is what hyperbaric oxygen is. Because of that increased pressure, and because we can drive more oxygen into your circulation, what we can do is we can saturate your red blood cells to 100%. That part's pretty easy. But what we can do beyond that is we can actually dissolve all of this oxygen into the liquid portion of your blood. It's called your plasma. Normally, your plasma holds very little oxygen. But under hyperbaric conditions, you can really drive anywhere from 30% more oxygen all the way up to about 20 times more oxygen into the plasma. And now you're creating a reservoir, which now the body has this extra oxygen, which it can finally use for improved recovery, improved healing, reduction in inflammation, increased in stem cells, you know, all these different things that hyperbaric oxygen can do. It's done because of that extra oxygen that we're driving into the cells through that extra pressure.
Now, how does that work exactly, that extra oxygen? You have this whole description, and I'm going to give a seventh grade view of it because that's how I understood it, is that basically the most important part of it is your mitochondria, which produces your cell energy, right? And your cell energy is, if your cells have good energy, that is what keeps inflammation and toxicity and so on under control, right? And so basically this oxygen creates more cell energy in the mitochondria, is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, you could look at the mitochondria as, you know, they used to call it the powerhouse of the cell, like in eighth grade bio or something. You know, it's literally the engine of the cell. It's what makes power so that the cells can run optimally. Now, if that's your liver, I'm simplifying things, but if that's your liver detoxifies. So if you have a lot of power in your liver, you can detoxify well. If you get a lot of power to your brain cells, you can process information, or you could, have more complex, thoughts or clearer thoughts. If it goes to your intestines, you can absorb, nutrients better. If it goes to your muscles, you can be faster or stronger. So wherever those engines are, the mitochondria, that cell type has a job, and that job is dependent on the mitochondria's ability to produce energy for that cell. Oxygen happens to be one of the rate limiting steps in energy production. And so just like in your car, if you want it, for people who, work on cars or understand how engines work, one of the things we would do is we would put like a cold air intake. We would try to drive more air into the engine, because we know that if we get more oxygen, we can burn a hotter, more powerful fire, which creates more power for that engine. This is like that. We're driving more oxygen into the engine of the cell, into the mitochondria, and that helps make the mitochondria even more productive in terms of how much energy it can produce. As we age, or as our bodies get ill from chronic illnesses, the energy production goes down. And so this is one of the ways where we can really upregulate that ATP, is what, you know, cellular energy is called. If we could upregulate the ATP production, we could really make an impact on how we can produce energy, but ultimately how we function, which turns into what our quality of life is actually about.
Now, it also, I think I understood this properly from your book, it also can multiply the creation of stem cells, right? And if you could explain what stem cells are and why that's important and what effect it has on the body.
Yes. So as we age, or as we are, you know, chronically inflamed or diagnosed with a chronic illness, we have cells that are called senescent cells. And those are basically old cells that don't function, you know, as well as the younger cells did. And they tend to produce a lot of inflammation, or they create poor signaling in between other cells. And so they're basically, they won't die, and they don't replicate, and they don't perform well. And so one of the body's job is to identify senescent cells. We do this really well when we're young, but you identify senescent cells and your body actually kills them because they're not functioning properly. And as you do that, that creates a space to allow stem cells, which are basically brand new, young, vibrant cells. Those stem cells will come in to replace wherever senescent cells are lost. And so hyperbaric oxygen has this way of, number one, helping to reduce cellular senescence. In other words, helps to get rid of all of these older dysfunctional cells. And then because of that, has a way of upregulating our body's ability to release stem cells, so that those stem cells can now go into all of those places where senescent cells were lost and start turning on a younger, more vibrant, you know, cell function in that area. And that goes across all cell types. So whether that's, you know, muscle tissue, bone tissue, ligament, tendon, anything musculoskeletal, but also hair, nails, skin, also brain cells, nervous system cells. So literally any cell type in our body, the stem cells get upregulated from hyperbaric oxygen.
Man, I'm ready to jump into it. One of those things right now. Okay, so I want to talk about the various diseases and how you would use hyperbaric therapy, oxygen therapy, to treat them, and what experience that would be for the patient. Let's talk about autoimmune illnesses, because as you reported in your book, 50 million Americans suffer from autoimmune disease. That is stunning. And the total cost associated with autoimmune diseases every year, $100 billion. So say somebody came, what's a common one that you treat?
I mean, there are quite a few. So, you know, we see patients with, you know, MS, ulcerative colitis, Crohn's.
Talk about MS.
So the first thing I'm going to say, and this is just an important distinction to make. Hyperbaric is approved for about 14 conditions. You know, in other words, the FDA has determined 14 conditions that are approved for marketing treatment of that issue with hyperbaric oxygen. All 14 of them, for the most part, almost all 14 of them are basically very acute and either life or limb threatening conditions. Things like gangrene, osteonecrosis, you know, necrotizing fasciitis, you know, flesh eating bacteria, carbon monoxide poisoning. So, you know, hyperbaric oxygen is approved for these literally life-threatening illnesses or limb-threatening illnesses where, you know, if we don't do something drastic quickly, you know, we're going to either obviously lose our life or potentially, you know, have something amputated. And in those cases, hyperbaric oxygen, even though it's a last case scenario, actually still works very well. Now, I bring that up only to say that all the other things that we use for hyperbaric oxygen, I virtually don't treat any FDA approved conditions using hyperbaric oxygen. We really specialize in what would be considered more off-label use. But if you looked at the mechanisms of action, the reason the reason that hyperbaric works for those 14 issues is very similar, if not almost identical, to the reasons, the mechanisms that we would use hyperbaric for all of these other conditions. And so technically, we're not treating MS, we're not treating ulcerative colitis, we're not treating Crohn's, we're not, you know, what we're doing is we're oxygenating people that happen to have, you know, a variety of different diagnoses. But it's through that extra oxygen that we were talking about earlier that ultimately starts to improve the regulation of that person's body. So things we know about hyperbaric oxygen is that it massively reduces inflammatory cytokines. So those chemicals that your body releases from inflammation, it really, it radically reduces those cytokines, but it also upregulates the anti-inflammatory system that naturally exists in our body. And
oh my God, could this treat COVID?
So that's a long conversation that, you know, there was a lot of interest yes, the short story is yes.
It just came to my head.
Of course. Yeah, no, there was a lot of interest in early COVID because, you know, a lot of patients, they were breathing okay. They just were losing oxygen saturation, if you remember. I mean, I'm in the New York area. Yeah. And we had, you know, so many people on ventilators and the whole bit. But it wasn't a breathing issue. It was an oxygenation issue. And when you really get down to the mechanics of ventilation versus something like hyperbaric oxygenation, ventilation helps you breathe. And the thought is that by, you know, there's some amount of pressure change that should help with oxygenation too. Hyperbaric has no effect on your ability to breathe. It doesn't make it easier to breathe. It doesn't make it harder to breathe. But because the air that you're breathing or the oxygen that you're breathing is pressurized, it does massively improve the gradient of getting oxygen past the lung into your circulation. So early COVID, there were enormous conversations going on worldwide. I was a part of people trying to figure out how to get, you know, large amounts of people exposed to hyperbarics to help them through their acute phase of the illness. After the first 8 or 9 months of COVID, for a variety of reasons that we won't get into, you know, that conversation just started to taper. But it's also right now, there's probably 9 clinical studies going on for acute COVID. There's about 10 or 11 that I know of that are also going on for post COVID, like the long haul.
Long COVID.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And all of them seem to be very favorable for hyperbaric.
Okay, let's get back to MS.
So with MS, there is obviously this massive inflammatory issue. And then within that inflammatory issue, there's a breaking down of the myelin. And the myelin is, it's like a fat insulation around our nervous system. So when your body gets oxidized in a negative way or through this inflammation, it's called lipid peroxidation, but it's the breakdown of that fatty tissue all over your body, but in particular, your cell membranes are fat-based, your nuclear membranes are fat-based, your mitochondria membranes are fat-based, and your myelin is as well. And so hyperbaric has this way of reducing lipid peroxidation, really helping to save that fatty tissue from the breakdown, and then improve, you know, the function through the reduction of inflammation. And then, of course, as we were saying earlier, you know, bringing in those stem cells to help replace those old dysfunctional cells to improve the function in that area. So, you know, there certainly are a handful of studies that have come out on MS now. We still need a lot more research. In a lot of these topics, we need a lot more research. But most certainly, my second patient was my stepdad, who still has MS. You know, and 14 years ago was diagnosed with a pretty aggressive version of MS. And, you know, we treated him very aggressively right after I was dealing with my disc herniation. And we saw incredible improvements from, you know, narrowing of his gait, improved balance. He got the feeling back in his feet, you know, so we had incredible changes. And now 15 years later, he's still doing, you know, really well. And that's just been part of his, you know, maintenance at this point.
So let's talk about cancer. Of course, I'm very interested in that because even though I'm healed, ostensibly, because I have no evidence of tumor, I live in some fear of it all coming back or something. And I'm sure there are people who do have tumors and who do have cancer, you know, who want to know what can hyperbaric do for cancer patients.
Sure. So when I got into this, you know, about 15 years ago, cancer was actually a contraindication. You were specifically not allowed to use hyperbaric for cancer. And the reason for that was really a misunderstanding of the connection between the two mechanisms. With cancer, there's a thing called angiogenesis, which means your body grows a lot more blood vessels. Right. And with hyperbaric, angiogenesis is also one of the phenomenons. And so the concern was, well, if cancer is angiogenic and hyperbaric is angiogenic, hyperbaric might help feed the cancer cells and actually grow, you know, help the cancer grow more. And I'd say over the last 15 years, and especially in the last 3 to 5, it's gone from a contraindication to an indication, whereas yes, they're both angiogenic, so they both increase blood vessels, but they do it for completely different reasons and in completely different ways. And ultimately, what we're finding out is that majority of cancer cells are anaerobic. They don't use oxygen. Their mitochondria that we were talking about earlier, they're broken. And so they have a completely different mechanism for producing energy, and they do it without oxygen. And so there's three ways that hyperbaric is being studied for cancer right now. The first is, a lot of patients, let's say you go a traditional route with radiation or chemo, what they're finding is that, you know, patients have a hard time, obviously, with things like radiation or even just getting through the treatment protocols because of how damaging the radiation is. And so one of the ways they're looking at this is, if you're doing hyperbaric while you're doing radiation, can you actually tolerate the radiation better and have less side effects? So that's one direction, which is also being shown to be pretty effective. Another one is, and we're not doing this in the US yet, but they're doing this outside of the country. It seems like there is a synergy between hyperbaric and certain chemos. Whereas if you're doing hyperbaric and chemotherapy simultaneously, it may turn out that you need less chemo and you'll get a very similar or the same effect with less damage because of the synergy between hyperbaric and chemo. And so that's obviously would be very favorable if that turns out. And there's some pretty good evidence in the last few years looking at that. And then the third way,
I'm sorry, I have to take a break right now. Oh, sure. We'll get back to the third way that hyperbaric helps cancer when we get back.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
Former chair of the Democratic National Committee, Donna Brazile, said during a television discussion on Sunday that Democrats need to stop sleeping at the wheel and waiting until the last 6 weeks of the midterm elections. The tone of her voice showed a sense of desperation that the Republicans and Trump have the upper hand at this point. "I know we're about to spend a ton of money on television. That's like just throwing water in the wind," said Brazile. But she just doesn't get it. The Democrats so far have focused on woke issues and a non-existent climate crisis. Now Brazile tells them to go back and remind people what the Democratic Party is doing to help them. Help them at the gas station. Help them in the grocery store. Help them where it matters, in their wallets, in their homes. Please! Does Donna Brazile believe this nonsense? Most voters won't. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
Every 2 minutes, an American is sexually assaulted. The majority of victims know their attacker. It could be your friend, your neighbor, or someone you met at a party. If you said no, it's rape, and it's a crime. This is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Call the National Sexual Assault Hotline today at 1-800-656-HOPE or visit RAIN.org. That's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Where progress is influenced by revolution and evolution. This is today's News Talk Radio. TNT. TNT.
We're back with Dr. Jason Saunders, who's talking to us about how he treats his patients with hyperbaric oxygen therapy. We were talking about treating cancer. He gave two ways that hyperbaric oxygen therapy helps, and he was about to give us the third way. So could you talk Absolutely. About that, please?
Sure. So the first was the connection between hyperbaric and radiation. The second was the connection between hyperbaric with chemo. The third is that it appears that the majority of cancer cells, especially solid tumors, they don't utilize oxygen well, and in fact, in many cases, don't utilize oxygen almost at all for energy production. And so it appears that when you flood the system with all of this extra oxygen, what you're doing is, number one, you're making all the healthy cells that happen to love oxygen perform really well. And so you're really nourishing all the healthy cells, all the healthy tissue surrounding the cancer. But you're also creating an environment that's very, non-conducive for the cancer cells, in which case you're upregulating that oxygen, and that helps to put a lot of stress on those cancer cells and could help actually, you know, at least minimize their growth, if not potentially help kill the cancer cells themselves. Lastly, within that same realm is that when you increase the, through hyperbaric oxygen, you increase the oxygen levels, you're increasing the immune system's ability to identify those sick and dysfunctional cells. And then the body uses a type of oxygen, it's called reactive oxygen species, but it uses a type of oxygen to help kill those dysfunctional cells. And so as we upregulate the immune system through the use of hyperbaric oxygen, we can make the immune system more efficient at helping to clear out the cancer cells themselves, which is a very normal process. I mean, that happens within your body and my body every day. And what we're doing this way is just making that system stronger and more efficient.
You know, I'm thinking that for people with cancer, maybe the better way to go is, and I'm not a doctor, I don't play one on TV, okay? But based on some of my observations as a cancer patient and also having several other people in my family who had cancer and did not survive, it might actually be better to, for example, have your tumor removed wherever it is. And then instead of going into chemo and radiation, go directly into hyperbaric and just clean it up that way. Because radiation and chemo are so destructive to the immune system.
You know, to the immune system and the surrounding tissue. You know, the yeah. issue right now in the U.S. is we're really not doing those studies because it's, let's say chemo or radiation is considered the standard of care. And so it would be considered, basically malpractice. If you did a study where, you didn't give them chemo or radiation, and that was the standard of care, and you put that patient at risk as a result of that, you'd get in some trouble. That's why I said they are doing studies like that outside the country, and they're looking.
But does that make sense to you?
I mean, personally, to me, no. But a lot of things.
Does it make sense to do the surgery and then hyperbaric?
Oh, to do that. I'd go so far to say, depending on how aggressive it is, where it is, and what the story is, you might even start with some hyperbaric, start creating an improved immune system response. You start reducing inflammation. You start putting some stress on the cancer cells themselves, even before the surgery. Then you do the surgery. Then you backfill that again with more oxygen. And again, I don't want to make this. I love hyperbaric oxygen. The majority of my professional career has been built around hyperbaric oxygen. But as you said earlier when we were talking, we have a whole functional medicine approach to things. So it's not like we utilize hyperbaric alone. So just recognize there would be other pieces.
Yeah, talk about the other things that you use in attendant with that. Talk about the other.
Again, if there's been some really great work. Dominic D'Agostino, Angela Poff, Thomas Seyfried. They've done a lot of work in what's called the metabolic approach to cancer. And again, we're getting away from looking at cancer being this genetic, you had the gene for this cancer, therefore you get it. Like we know, let's say BRCA, is a common yes. gene to talk about. And so, we know that there are plenty of patients that do not have any sign of BRCA genetics and they could still get cancer. We also know plenty of people who are positive, BRCA 1 or 2, and they don't get cancer. And so while there's a correlation between those things, there's not necessarily, it's not causation, it's correlation. And again, there's so many other factors involved that we really don't even understand yet. And so, the metabolic approach to cancer is to say that cancer cells are developing because of a metabolism within the cell that's dysfunctional, and that's creating a change in its behavior. And then those cells are starting to replicate and build, tumors and other things. And so, addressing that metabolically, which would be to say massively changing your diet, right? Because your metabolism is based on your what we eat. So when we change our fuel and we change our oxygen levels, we completely change cell function. And if we do it in certain ways, we can put a lot of tension, a lot of stress on these cancer cells. And while we're putting stress on these cancer cells and helping to at least slow the growth, if not reverse it or kill them off, at the same time, we're actually improving the health of all of the surrounding tissue. Healthy cells love the change of oxygen. Healthy cells love the change of metabolism. Healthy cells love to try to adapt to a changing environment. Cancer cells are not very adaptable. And so they're trying to control the environment in a certain way. And when we stress them that, you know, in multi-therapeutic through changing metabolism, changing oxygen, reducing inflammation, all those pieces, you know, we can really shift that person's body away from illness.
Yeah, you mentioned that D'Agostino suggested that combining hyperbaric oxygen therapy with a ketosis diet, which is what talk about that, is an effective non-toxic therapy for the treatment of metastatic cancer.
So basically, cells could make energy with oxygen and without oxygen, and then cells could make energy from glucose or fat. Okay. And so the idea here is that cancer cells predominantly use glucose. So cancer cells use sugar and they make oxygen or they make energy without oxygen. So they're choosing glucose and without oxygen as their combined mechanism for energy production.
Sugar and no oxygen.
Correct. Other cells, healthier cells, would use either sugar or fat. And then they would use oxygen because you could make a lot more energy when you're using oxygen than when you're not using oxygen. Ketosis is all about removing sugar so much so that the body literally there's not enough sugar for any of the cells to function. And so what happens is your fat metabolism, your ability to burn fat with oxygen skyrockets. And so what it appears is that it's not just flooding the system with oxygen that works. It's depriving the body of sugar and then improving the body's ability to burn fat and mixing that fat with oxygen for fuel that makes it almost impossible for cancer cells to survive. And they've gotten quite a few studies showing, you know, pretty severe metastatic disease, pretty severe glioblastoma, like brain, very aggressive brain cancers, and having enormous changes in life expectancy as a result of this metabolism change in those cells. And that seems to be something that, you know, obviously it's different than what the standard of care is, but it seems to not only extend life expectancy, but also quality of life and do it in a pretty non-toxic way.
Well, I have to ask you this question because I certainly have had to fight to avoid some radiation. Kidney cancer and chemotherapy doesn't work, and they all admit that. But you know, people were trying to give me radiation, which I refused. This is so amazing, and it's so non-toxic. The allopathic world would just blow up if this became standard care. I mean, the immunotherapy right now is like $30,000 a pop. You know, a lot of cancer drugs, chemo is, I don't know how many thousands of dollars per infusion. And you're coming in with hyperbaric oxygen therapy and a diet that could, in a way that doesn't destroy your healthy, any of your healthy cells, get somebody back online cancer free. So is that part of the reason why this revolutionary idea and practice is not moving along faster than it is?
You know, I would say it's not just in this particular, let's say in cancer alone. The overall approach is that, you know, I said earlier, you know, the field of hyperbaric oxygen needs a lot more research. Now, you know, when you have a drug that you're putting out that you could actually patent, and that patentable drug, you know, could be, you know, it's a billion-dollar project and it's a multi-billion dollar, you know, profit, people are motivated to spend a lot of time and money on the research around that. You know, oxygen is not patentable. There's really, just being totally honest, there's not a lot of, you know, money to be made in hyperbaric oxygen the way that it would be in, you know, traditional medications and the like. So, you know, there's a lot of resistance for something that's this simple, but theoretically this effective to become, you know, a standard of care for the majority. You know, most of the illnesses that should be considered for hyperbaric oxygen are chronic illnesses. They're really not things that we die from quickly. They're just things that eat away at our quality of life for decades. And they're things that we can figure out medications for to help keep people more comfortable, as I said earlier, on their inevitable decline in quality of life over the next, you know, 20 to 40 years. And, you know, if hyperbaric oxygen did some of that and improved quality of life and reduced people's need for, you know, some of those medications, that might not be considered great for business in some circles.
This paradigm has got to change. I mean, just the fact that you pointed out very starkly that the way you functional medicine people look at the patient is not looking at the disease, but looking at how to and dealing with symptoms of the disease. You're looking at how to create the health, not the disease. Is that
yeah, I wouldn't even say right, create I wouldn't even say create the health. The body, my opinion, the body is what heals itself. All we're doing is removing the interference from that process. You know, I'll be the last person to think that what I did, or, you know, I'm so smart, I helped that patient. The body heals itself. I'm just trying to figure out what's interfering with that process and restore normal. If we can restore a normal, healthy environment to the body, the cells do what they're supposed to do. Not, you know, it's not because I made them do it. It's because the body knows exactly what to do. Most of the things that we're treating, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, you know, things that are early, high glucose, even diabetes as a whole, the majority of the things that we're treating that way, those are the body's response to the things that we're doing to it, the environment that it's being exposed to. And all we're doing, you know, your blood pressure gets high, we give you some meds, it comes down, but the environment stays the same. So eventually the body pushes through, and now you need a higher dose. Now you need three different medications. Now you know.
Yeah, you're treating the symptom. You're not looking at what is it that's causing this high blood pressure. We're just going to give you this medicine for high blood because it presented itself. 100%. What about diabetes 1? Is hyperbaric oxygen therapy good for diabetes 1 too?
It can be. You know, that's more of the autoimmune version of diabetes. And so that's a much trickier situation. And again, there has to be whether it's type 1 or type 2, or in a lot of ways, you know, they're even talking about certain types of dementia being considered to be type 3 diabetes, where the blood sugar doesn't affect the pancreas, but ultimately, you know, the weakness is in the brain. And so the out of balance blood sugar starts affecting the brain. But, you know, all of those versions, you still have to affect other pieces, like other areas that help reduce inflammation, other areas that help balance the immune system. How do we keep our blood sugar, you know, under control in the first place? So those have to be part of it. You know, hyperbaric oxygen isn't the cure-all. And in fact, I would argue it doesn't actually cure anything. All it does is provide the body with a nutrient that the body needs to function properly. And for the first time in a person's life, when they go in that chamber, they're finally getting levels of that nutrient that go beyond just the amount that you and I need right now to have this conversation. It's creating that surplus that's actually utilized for healing and recovery, which is, you know, that's not something we always have access to.
Well, you must have a lot of patients who come out of your office feeling like, wow, I have just, you know, I have just experienced a miracle. I want to thank you for coming on the show. I think what your work is incredibly important. I hope everybody in the world hears this broadcast, because you are doing something quite amazing. Thank you so much for coming on.
I appreciate you, Christina.
Really appreciate
Thank
it.
You.